Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears along with you here on a Wednesday morning. And we're doing something this morning that we do each and every year, and it's always one of our traditions and one of the most fun things we do every year. And we will do that this hour. Now, as many of you know, it is that time of year when the 2021 Old Farmer's Almanac will go on sale. It goes on sale September the 1st, just right around the corner. And we're lucky enough to be joined this morning by one of the assistant editors of the Old Farmer's Almanac, Ben Kilbride. Ben, how are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Good to speak with you. I don't think we've ever gotten the chance to speak before, so this will be a lot of fun.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, Ben, I want to get a little background on you. How long have you been with the Old Farmer's Almanac?
I've been working here for about 3 years now.
Now, how did you come to that position?
So that's an interesting story. So I had come back into town after traveling the country for about 6 months working on farms. And I got in contact with my old high school teacher who was working at the Almanac at the time. And he told me that they were looking for somebody and that I might be a good fit. And it ended up working out really well because I was right then very interested in farming. And then this is about, you know, writing about gardening and farming. So it's kind of, it turned into a good fit.
Now, what is it about gardening and farming that interests you?
It's really the self-sustainability aspect of it that I find interesting. You know, we're in our world right now, you know, supermarkets make it very, we're very separate from our food system. So I really like the idea of farming and gardening because it allows you to create your own sustenance and, you know, be separate from all of that and really be just like, you know, completely in tune with nature again.
Now, Ben, we think of this as a once-a-year publication that comes out in the fall. What goes into it during the year, the other 12 months?
We're working on the next one already. Obviously, we're thinking ahead by a year and a half in advance, usually. And what goes into it is usually we'll pick all the ideas, which is happening right now, and then we'll slowly put it all together. So it's, you know, it's about eight of us working on this throughout the year. So there's a lot that goes into it. Really, we just kind of pick away at it and try and get it done in time.
Now, what does an assistant editor do?
So I do a little bit of everything. I do a lot of proofing. I do a lot of fact checking, which is really important. Everything is completely fact checked. I specifically work on the left-hand calendar pages, which are the ones that have all of the sunrise and sunset information, like the day, tide, times, and heights, and also the skywatch information. So if you want to find out, you know, what meteor showers or moon phases are happening at any time of the month, you can look there for that information.
Now, what is the background in general of the Old Farmer's Almanac? How did it all start?
So it started in 1792, 229 years ago, with our founder, Robert B. Thomas. He was a farmer in Massachusetts who had a knack for predicting weather accurately, which at the time was extremely important. I mean, it's still important, but at the time, you know, there were no satellites, there were no apps for the weather. So the almanac was really what farmers relied on to know if they were able to, you know, what to grow, when to grow it, when the frost dates were going to be. You know, he created this almanac, and it was a huge resource at the time for people.
Now, what do we know about Robert B. Thomas? What kind of a guy was he?
He was an interesting guy. He was extremely dedicated to the almanac. I remember he got sick in the early 1800s, and he still worked on the almanac as he was in his bed trying to recover. So he was an extremely dedicated editor, family man. Really, a lot of the values that we hold dear in the almanac, he embodied.
What was important to him to have in the almanac, knowing what we know during the years that he published it?
What was important to him, so at the time the almanac was, you know, a little thinner. We've fleshed it out over the years. It was mainly just weather and astronomical information with a little bit of recipes and a little bit of folklore. What was really important to him was really the weather, and that's really stayed the core of the almanac.
Now, the weather part of it, how is that calculated?
The way we predict the weather has changed over the years because, you know, we have a lot more accurate technology these days, but what he originally did and what we continue to do is we use solar science, which is the study of sunspots and other solar activity. Sunspots are really geomagnetic storms on the surface of the sun, and the way it works is he figured out that the more sunspots that there are at a given time, the more influence it has on the weather on our planet. And now, of course, we also use climatology, which is the study of the prevailing weather patterns, like the big ocean currents and wind patterns, and then also meteorology, which is the study of the atmosphere.
How many people work on the weather part of this?
I'd say, since it's a mixture of a few of our own weather people, and we also use 30-year averages, which are put out by the government, which are 30-year averages of the precipitation and temperature ranges throughout the United States. So I'm not sure I can actually say how many people worked on it because there's so much information out there that we combine and mix together. And then we also use all of our previous almanacs to compare to, because the best way to know what's going to happen in the future is to look to the past. So it's uncountable.
Are there ever conflicting opinions among the people who are looking at the weather, the meteorologists?
I'd say there probably are sometimes, but working as a team together, you know, we have to figure it out together so we can figure out what's going to go into the almanac.
Now, how is that process done? How do you decide what's going to make it in and what's not going to make it in?
So overall, we throughout the year we kind of add different ideas that we might have. You know, we end up with a big file full of pages and pages of different ideas and people who might be able to write them. And then we all sit down together for a meeting and just kind of hash it out and put down the ideas that we want. You know, it's a couple hours of just trying to get a good spread because we don't want there to be too much of any one topic. What's great about the almanac is that it has a little bit of everything, you know, food, gardening, sports, history, we like to keep it that way.
Are those easy meetings to go into, or is there a lot of this needs to be in, this doesn't need to be in, we need to do this a different way?
We're a pretty good team. It's kind of like a family gathering, you know, maybe like over like a Thanksgiving dinner. So, you know, a little bit of argument here and there, but overall it's all good fun.
To this day, this remains a very important publication. Why has it remained so important?
So, the reason that the almanac stayed important is we've continued to update it with the times. You know, originally it was just for farmers. Nowadays, We make it accessible to anybody who needs this kind of information. And that's included, you know, it's mainly about gardening now instead of farming, because most of the people who read it are people in their backyard, you know, just learning how to grow tomatoes or cucumbers and that kind of thing. But we also keep the core traditional values of the almanac in here. So, you know, the cover looks the same, pretty much the same as it did when it first came out. And we want to make sure that people understand that, that like I was talking about before, about what I like about farming is the self-sustainability aspect, the homesteading. Those core values are still in the almanac.
What is something other than the weather that is absolutely imperative that remains in the almanac every year?
That would definitely be the astronomical information. So that would be like the calendar pages and Skywatch, and then also information on the visible planets, which tells you, you know, when to when it's best to see Venus and Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, Mercury, and, you know, the rise and set times of those, as well as eclipses each year. So that's definitely, yeah, that's very important.
Why do you think that information has stayed so important?
I think the stars and the sun and the moon are important to pretty much every culture that's been on our planet. They've inspired different stories and tales in every culture and are kind of a constant throughout our lives. And just like the almanac is a constant through our lives.
Now, do we know what the age makeup is of people who buy this almanac?
Yeah, I'd say that the majority of our readership is probably in their, 40 to 60s, people who own land and, are looking for information to help with managing that. But we also have a growing readership with younger people, like myself, in the, early 20s and 30s, who are just starting to learn how important gardening is, and homesteading, and self-sustainability.
It's very interesting because people access things so many different ways now with the internet. Do we know how the almanac is most accessed?
I'd say it's still most accessed through the copy version, the printed version. We put out 2.5 million copies every year. And that's definitely where it's still going. But of course, our website, almanac.com, has a huge treasure trove of information that people are looking at every day, and we're always updating that. And gardening is by far our biggest pages on there.
Now, when it comes to gardening, what do people want to know that goes in the almanac?
So people are usually looking for a lot of beginner information, which is, what to plant, when to plant it, how to harvest it, how to deal with pests. But there's also a lot of information here that is useful for long-time gardeners, like the frost dates, which will tell you for specific areas when the most likely first and last frost dates are, which are extremely important to know because, frost kills most plants. So that's definitely important. And then we also have gardening by the moon phases, which is a pretty big page.
Now, I'm not much of a gardener. What's the main thing you need to know about gardening if you're going to be successful?
My best advice would be start small and use a raised bed. So you can focus your energy better on a smaller plot of land so that you can really get the most out of that. If you spread yourself too thin, I did this myself, by planting too much, you're going to get overwhelmed later in the season when everything's all growing or you have a bunch of pests and all the weeding that you have to do, and you'll end up with a lot of dead plants.
Why do you think the astrological part has stayed so important?
The astrological part, so you mean like the zodiac signs?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd say that is also a traditional aspect of the almanac, just because the almanac is also big into folklore, so I think those are pretty intertwined and similar.
For people who don't know what that is, and I would think most people do, but kind of explain in your best words what that is all about, how that comes about. How do we get those signs? How do we get those predictions that come along with it? Where does that all come from?
So the astrological information is based on where the stars were about 400 years ago. And the difference between that and the astronomical information is that, so the astrological is where the stars were 400 years ago, and now, you know, the stars have moved over time, so they're not in the same place anymore. So the astronomical information is where the stars are currently. So the way the astrological information gets placed is based on where those planets were a long time ago. They have all the information and charts for those specific signs that everyone knows about. And then those signs get placed on the chart that you can actually see in the almanac on our zodiac signs page. And through that, you can see the best days actually are where we get that information. So best days to like cut your hair or start gardening or start projects or quit smoking. Those are all in our best days, which are based on the astrological signs.
Mm. Now, has this been in since the beginning?
I am not sure about that. There's a lot of information in the original almanacs, but I'm not positive that the astrological information was in there.
Do you think there's a lot of belief in, you know, this is the best day to quit smoking, this is the best way, or best day to do that, the best day to do this? Do you think people follow that as much as they used to?
I'd say it depends on who you're asking, obviously. I still get calls regularly from people who are asking when the best days to do things are or advice on that. So I'd say it really depends. I'd say there's a complete mix of people who follow it and people who don't, and there's merit in both.
Is there anything new that has went in this year that has not been in the past?
I'm not sure. I mean, we've got tons of articles that are all brand new. From time-tested tips for fighting colds to how to pick a pet to a test for testing your sky knowledge, different astronomical information. So there's lots of stuff in here that's new that hasn't been in there before. But overall, it's the same topics that we've held dear all this time.
Where do the articles come from?
So like we were talking about before, the articles are things that we come up with throughout the year, different ideas that we come across through our research and fact-checking and just daily lives. And then each editor, presents, and then we decide if it's a good fit or not.
When you come across something, what makes it something that would end up in the Old Farmer's Almanac?
Something we're looking for is something that's useful with a pleasant degree of humor. So, it's got to be informative, but then also a little quippy, have a little bit of folklore, maybe a few puns. That's kind of what we're looking for.
What mostly would you compare the Old Farmer's Almanac to? What other publication is it most like?
Ooh, I'm not sure if there is anything that's most like it. I mean, there are other almanacs, but ours is definitely the longest continuously published one in the United States. I think it's one of its kind.
If you look at the first one and you look at the one that will be published this year, what differences have taken place over the years?
So the original, of course, was all in black and white. Nowadays, we have a full color section as well, which really brings the whole thing to life. in the first one, I think we had said before, it's mostly weather, astronomical information, some folklore, and a few recipes. But nowadays, we also have the gardening aspect, and we have nature and pets and history and home remedies and all these different things that weren't in the original.
When did the biggest change happen over the history of the almanac? What do you think was the biggest change?
I'd say the biggest change was probably the color pages when those got put in, because that added a whole new section, made the almanac a lot longer, and then also changed the kinds of things that we could put in there, because it, you know, originally there weren't really many pictures, but when the color was in there, it got put in, and it really brought it to life.
Tell me about the publishing business. Now, we have seen it over the years. Magazines have become more expensive. There are less of them than there used to be. Newspapers face the same trouble. When it comes to publishing this and getting it to the shelves, has it become easier or harder?
It's definitely become harder over time. With the increase of use of the internet, people have definitely turned towards digital publications a little more than they used to, but we have continued to change and adapt, and we're still putting out this 2.5 million copies of the almanac, so we're still working really hard on that, and I think we'll continue to last through all of this.
When it comes out, what kind of feedback do you get immediately from people?
Oh, feedback-wise, people love it when it comes out. They're usually really excited and happy that the next edition is out. You know, these people who have been getting it for years and like to keep it, you know, on their coffee table, by their phone, by, you know, in the bathroom. Those are pretty common places, and it's they're usually just happy that there's a whole new edition out there that they can read throughout the year, pick up, and learn something new.
Has there been a year or a time when the almanac was just not as accurate as it had been in other years?
So our prediction rate, at least for the weather forecast, if that's what you're referring to, has been historically, and we've held this through all of our 229 issues, 80% accurate. So this last year, it was 80.5%. So sometimes we're a little bit more, but we're always at least 80%.
Has there ever been a year where things were just way off?
No, I don't think so. We've held pretty solid to that 80%.
What do you think keeps that sustainability?
I think that has a lot to do with both our ability to fact check, so we're always checking everything in the book to make sure it's accurate, as well as the use of all of the previous editions that we have to look back on to learn from.
Are the people who work on this the same people every year? Is there a lot of turnover at the Old Farmer's Almanac?
No, there isn't. There's a lot of the same people have been working on this for a long time. I mean, obviously we'll get new people, some people will leave, but people who work on the almanac are in it for the long haul.
Now, why do you think people stay for a long time?
I think it's a great place to work. We have a very family atmosphere. We all work together as a great team, and it's a really interesting variety of information that we get to work with every day. So, you know, on any given day, I could be fact-checking something about chili peppers to proofing a whole spread of articles about hockey or, you know, raising chickens. And I think it's that diversity that really gets us all interested in everything that we're doing every day.
How does the fact-checking process take place?
So the fact-checking process, we get an article and we'll go through and check every single piece of information that, you know, just every single piece of information that you can fact-check. And then find reputable sources, either online or in print. If it's online, we'll usually use .edu resources, which are more accurate than, say, a .com. that's mostly how the fact-checking process works. And then, of course, we're all checking each other's work. So if somebody fact-checked didn't make sense to somebody else, they might raise a question. We'll talk about it. We'll figure out what went wrong.
What is something that you personally brought to the table this year that you really wanted to be in the almanac that got in?
Well, I'd say the farming profiles one, which we've been doing for a number of years now, but I was hoping we would continue doing and did continue to go in, which is a really great article with a series of interviews with profiles of farmers from around the country, which is really great because it's talking about, how they got started on their farm, what difficulties they might have come across during their time, and, really it's super important these days to know where your food's coming from, who's growing the food, and this article is a great way to learn about that.
And what is something that you wanted to be in that didn't make it in?
You know, I'm not sure I remember because that was like a year and a half ago.
So it's that the 2021 version was prepared a year and a half ago.
We started to prepare it a year and a half ago. We finished it back in May.
Now, kind of take me through that entire process, because I think that's interesting. When you sit down and say, okay, we're going to start up until the time that it has to be ready to go, what happens?
So the start, of course, is the ideas meeting. And then from there, each of us has a certain section that we work on. Like I said before, I work on the left-hand calendar pages. And then slowly we pick away at it throughout the year, which is really nice. I enjoy the ability to spread out all of our work over a long period of time so we can be really accurate and really detail-oriented. About in like February, March, we'll start fact-checking all of the articles that have been written, and then they'll go into layout, which is where they get put into the actual page spread with the pictures, and then all of those get sent around to all of the editors so that we can look at them, make sure the text output incorrectly, make sure that the pictures are in fact pictures of what they say they are, and then they get put into basically a huge spread, which is every single article in order, and we go through the entire thing together. Takes about a day. Check every single question that any of us might have and compare it to the other ones. And it's actually a really fun process because sometimes there'll be a lot of questions on the page, sometimes there won't be any. But having all of us together to do it really makes it the process fun and accurate. And then after that, it goes to the printers.
Now, when it comes out on the shelf and you're in the grocery store and you see it there and you know you were a part of it, what kind of feeling do you have?
I feel a deep pride. It's a really awesome feeling to be able to, work on it throughout the year and then see it in a store and pick it up and know that I worked on it.
Now, we definitely want to get to the weather. Again, we're chatting with Ben Kilbride, one of the assistant editors of the 2021 Old Farmer's Almanac, which will be on sale September the 1st. Ben, here for where we are in Ohio, in Marion, Ohio, what does this winter look like?
So this winter is going to be a lot warmer than normal on average. So, looking at a few degrees warmer overall. But if you're looking for the coldest periods, you're going to be looking in the early to mid December, and then from the end of December into January, and then the end of January. And then also it's going to be about, like, for rainfall at least, when it rains in the winter, it's going to be about normal, but there's going to be less snow overall in most areas. If you're looking for snow, then that's going to be in the beginning of December and the middle to the end of February and the beginning of March that you're going to look for that.
So what will the temperatures be like through the fall, September, October, November?
So let's actually in our previous almanac that you'd be looking for that information. So in your area, temperatures are going to be ranging. They're going to be mostly normal for your area. November is going to be about 2 degrees below average for most of the month, and December is going to be about 4 degrees above average, and with a higher precipitation. So, you know, overall, you're going to be looking at a slightly cooler November and a slightly warmer December.
So December will be warmer?
Slightly.
So what would be an average temperature in December?
So an average temperature in December, like I said, a few degrees warmer. So we don't give specific averages or specific temperatures for each individual day. We give a range throughout a month. And, overall, for example, the 1st through the 3rd of December, we say it's going to be snowy and cold. So if you're, looking to do something that involves snow and it's cold, then that's going to be the period that you're going to be looking for to do that. But we don't have an exact temperature for each of those days.
So again, coming up this winter, not going to be a lot of snow, which there has, last year was one of the least snowy winters I think we have had, and temperature-wise, it was not bad last year.
Yep, same for us. Yeah, I think that's kind of a growing trend, as we've seen that for a few years running now.
What do you think is causing all of that? It's 1 year we say, well, that's just an odd year, but it's been going on now for quite a while. It's almost becoming the norm.
Yeah, so we've had to look at that again and again, and at this point, our weather people can't deny that it's due to global climate change. It's a real thing, and it's affecting weather all across the planet.
Now, because a lot of times this gets politicized, but what is that? What, for people who don't really understand it, they just hear the word all the time, what is happening?
So, basically, global climate change is where there's an increase of CO2 gases in our atmosphere due to a number of factors, but the greatest is human involvement, mainly, the exhaust from cars and the agricultural sector that's containing the CO2 in the air far more than normally would be, and that's having what's called a greenhouse effect, just like you see in smaller greenhouse where it would slowly get warmer inside. That's happening across our planet as well, which is raising the temperatures in the ocean, which causes different temperatures everywhere. It doesn't make it warm across the whole planet, but it will drastically change temperatures. So it can be colder in some places, warmer in others, and then also more intense storms, greater wind patterns, things like that.
As a younger person, do you have any idea why this has been discussed now for more than 20 years, and there still is some resistance to it?
I'm not sure. I've grown up with it, so it seems like it's just a part of what I've understood, but I'm not sure.
As we get to next spring, Easter time, what will the temperatures look like? What will the weather be like?
Yeah, so in around Easter in the region, so the average temperature for the entire month is going to be about 50 degrees, which is about 2 degrees above average, and you're going to be getting a slightly more rain as well. So it's going to be a little bit warmer, a little bit more rainy.
And then the summer of 2021, ending the summer of 2020. The summer of 2021, what will that look like?
So next summer is going to be warmer and rainier than normal. In your region, it's going to be slightly cooler, but it is going to be rainier as well. And, of course, the hottest periods are going to be in the end of July in June and then in the middle of August.
How many areas are there in the Almanac?
So we have 18 regions in the United States and 7 in Canada.
What are the sales like in Canada compared to the United States?
So we have a smaller readership, but they're a very dedicated readership. So I'm not sure of the exact numbers, but there's definitely fewer in Canada, but just as much interest overall.
You know, all we have talked about this year has been this pandemic. Has the pandemic in any way affected the Old Farmer's Almanac?
So I'd say the two biggest things. One, most of us are working from home, which I'm sure a lot of people can relate to. That's been a big change. And then the other is that in the spring we saw a huge increase in interest in gardening. And we think that was mostly because people were at home and were kind of looking for something to do with their time, and they realized that they could be growing things, which is an extremely productive and useful way of using using that time. And I'm really happy to see that because it's such a great way to learn how to grow your own food. It's extremely empowering, and it's great for your mental health.
Now, you had talked earlier on about the group effort that goes into producing this almanac, not being able to go to an office, working from home. How has that been?
It was a bit of a change, but we do video chat meetings every week. We're in constant communication with each other. We'll take phone calls. We'll email regularly. So it's been a change in that we can't just walk into each other's offices and ask a question, but we are in just as much communication as we normally would be.
What is the most important thing, do you think, and we can only guess this, that Robert B. Thomas would be the founder of this, would be, this cannot leave the almanac, other than the weather, this has to be in?
I'd say probably the folklore and the bit of humor that goes into the almanac. So, you know, our kind of like phrase that we go along with it is that it's useful with pleasant grief humor. That's definitely a very good description of him, Robert B. Thomas as well. I don't think he'd want the humor to leave, but also the most important aspect is that everything is useful to people.
Now, when we talk about humor, what kind of things are in the almanac in the humor category?
So in the humor category, we usually have, you know, something called Anecdotes and Pleasantries, which is an article we put in every year, and it's got these little stories that are mailed in from around the country of funny things like there are over 4,000 pizza-related injuries every year. You didn't know that, but it's kind of funny, isn't it?
Pizza-related injuries.
Yeah, like burning the roof of your mouth, you know, stabbing yourself with a fork by accident, delivery people tripping on stairs. Those are all pizza-related.
Well, I guess you'll have that.
Yeah, yeah, and there's a lot of other great little things like that in here.
Are there things that come in, because I would imagine humor is hard to gauge, because you want to put things in that are funny, but nothing that's going to offend. Where's that line, in your opinion?
I'd say we put in things that are universally funny. I would call our humor kind of like the dad joke range of funny with some pretty good puns.
Now, when it comes to folklore, what kind of things are in regard to that?
So folklore, we, on all the calendar pages, we have lines with folklore in there to start off every month, as well as, you know, a number of home remedy sections, which also include some folklore. It's kind of spread throughout. I'm not sure this year we have anything that is specifically just about folklore, but it's kind of spread throughout.
What do you think the legacy of the Old Farmer's Almanac is?
I'd say the legacy is being something that comes out every year without fail, no matter what happens, and is here for people to be useful, but also humorous, and just be a part of their lives, and a core part of their lives to help them through the year.
What do you foresee as the biggest change that might happen in the next 50 years regarding the Almanac? Do you think more people will access it on the internet? Do you think the copy version will ever go away?
I don't think the copy version will ever go away. It might get smaller, it might get larger. It's really hard to predict that far into the future what the world is going to be like, since we're on such a track for moving and changing so quickly these days. But I think the Almanac will continue to be a part of it, whether it's online or in print.
When you have the Almanac at your home, what type of things do you like to look at, even though you were a part of the construction of it?
So I like to look at the astronomical information. Like in August this year, well, it's still August, early August, there were the Perseid meteor showers, and I was, flipping through the book, and I saw that that was coming up, and I went out for a couple of nights in a row and got to see a ton of meteors, which is really awesome, and I wouldn't have known about that otherwise.
Do you think a lot of people rely on the internet for information like that that ends up being incorrect, unfortunately?
There is a lot of incorrect information on the internet, but there's also a lot of correct information, and it's just a skill with knowing where to look and what sources are reputable. But with the Almanac, you don't have to worry about that because we are an extremely reputable source, so you can trust us on that.
Does any information come from the internet? Is that a tool now that is used to gather information? Obviously, it's fact-checked, but is that a place where you would go?
Yeah, we still go there sometimes, but most of our information, when it comes to the writing of the articles, comes from talking with people. We go to people who really know their stuff, so they're experts on the subject, because the best way you can learn something is to talk to somebody who's been doing it for years.
You talked about the submissions that come in from people around the country. How many of those submissions get used, and how many submissions come in?
So, depending on what type of submission, so we have a recipe contest as well as an essay contest, and we get hundreds of entries into both of those contests every year. And I'd say it's pretty similar to for all of the other article ideas and things like that.
When do you think, or when did we see the big wane in farming start to happen?
I'm not entirely sure, but I'd say it'd probably be around the Industrial Revolution, early 1900s, when, cities started to get larger, factories were being built, and our culture kind of changed from mostly living off the land to a slightly different system that's kind of slowly built and grown into what we have today.
When it comes to something like a home remedy, which is in there, how are those tested and fact-checked?
So the home remedies are usually pretty simple. They're usually things like different things that you can eat that might have antibacterial qualities, like eating fresh ginger root or drinking rosehip tea, which has a lot of vitamin C, can help to relieve cold symptoms, that kind of stuff. And all of those are completely fact-checked against reputable sources to make sure that they are, in fact, scientifically true. Whenever we put in folklore, we don't recommend saying, that is accurate, that's going to work for you. It's more of, this is the folklore, this is the thing that they may have done at one point, but we're not going to recommend that you do it. But when it comes to the remedies, the home remedies, we're very clear on which things we say are things you should actually do.
We've been chatting here this morning with Ben Kilbride, one of the assistant editors of the 2021 Old Farmer's Almanac. Will be on sale September 1st. Ben, before we let you go here, tell people where they can get it other than the stores, and give us your pitch this year for buying the 2021 version.
So you can find it at almanac.com/where-to-buy, which will give you a list of stores in your region where you can find it. But you can also get it from Amazon to make it really easy for you. I'd say the Almanac this year is a really great resource for all of your gardening and cooking needs, as well as all the astronomical information and weather information, which is constantly changing and is really important to stay on top of. And overall, I'd say if you want something that's going to hold to home values and, you know, sustainability and your the way we used to live, I would stick with this and get a copy this year.
Very interesting. Ben Kilbride, assistant editor of the 2021 Old Farmer's Almanac, on sale September the 1st. Always a lot of fun to do this every year. Ben, it's a pleasure talking to you, and hopefully we can do it in the future. Much success with this year's almanac.
Thank you so much. It's been a great pleasure.
Thank you so much. Ben Kilbride, hey, one of our regular segments, the Old Farmer's Almanac 2021 edition, on sale September 1st. We'll be back in 10 minutes.
Dr. Steve Whitaker is the pastor at Community Christian Fellowship in Prospect, Ohio. Address 209 East Water Street. This is High Above Marion WWGH News Chop.